JD, we're ruined. We are absolutely spoiled, and it'll never be the same. Trade deadline day met the hype, which seems almost impossible annually. And now we're going to believe, like next year and the year after, that, yeah, it could be an incredibly busy, amazing, well-paced day full of action. We're ruined. It's completely ruined us. It was amazing on Monday, wasn't it?
I had a blast. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, usually these days, like I think last year, you know, we had one deal like in the first 3 hours, and then things started to trickle in. But this did not disappoint. And, you know, I think, you know, and nothing too crazy, but I guess, you know, probably the biggest news still on the day, you can either look at it as J.G. Pageau or, you know, if you're out west, definitely Jacob Markstrom, not a trade, but that was a could be a very devastating injury to the Vancouver Canucks.
Man, that's tough timing for them. Well, let's start there just because that's been, I think, their MVP this year. And that doesn't mean that Quinn Hughes hasn't been great, because he has, and that Elias Pettersson isn't an elite player, because he is. But Markstrom has just been so steady for them in a year where they're exceeding all expectations, it seems. And now they have to live without him, in theory, right into potentially what? April? That's not good at all for the Canucks. And if you had that news a week earlier, you probably could go out and address it and trade, or say, you know what, I know we've already got one first out the door for JT Miller, but let's send another big asset out to get Robin Leonard. That was really tough timing for the Canucks.
It sure was, Ryan. And I'm not, you know, look, we found out, I guess, what, at noon Pacific time, right when the deadline ended, when Jim Benning addressed the media, it's quite possible that they could have made a deal prior to the deadline. But regardless, I mean, yeah, look, Jacob Markstrom has been the Canucks MVP, without a doubt. He has saved them their bacon on many nights. But, you know, when you look at what happened last night, and granted, it's the Montreal Canadiens and a team that's out of the playoffs. You know, they got a really big performance out of Thatcher Demko in the end. I mean, they were down 2-0 and 3-1, and I think he finished with 36 saves. Just his second road win, though, this year. That was kind of surprising for me, and they're going to need more. They're going to need more. But I will say, Ryan, I think they have the right coach. I just got off the phone before we did this interview with someone who used to work with Travis Green back from his AHL days. And just glowing things that I was being told about Travis Green. And the one thing that was interesting, it was suggested that he actually may be a better GM than a coach.
Man, that team has just worked so hard under him the entire time that he's been there. I've been really impressed. And I guess it was a matter of time. The scary thing for the Canucks is next year is the last year for both Hughes and Pettersson on the entry levels. Like, this is a lovely story, but when you got to start carving around $20 million aside for those two guys, that's an entirely different game of building a roster and being competitive. Markstrom's deal's up at the end of the year. Vertanen's probably going to get 20. He's got Arbrights. Success is great, but it makes things a whole lot more difficult when lots of guys are playing well and need raises.
Yeah, it definitely comes at a huge price tag. And look, you know, so we'll see where things go this year. But, you know, the Tyler Toffoli trade has worked out very well for them. You know, it's 3 goals and what, 5 points in 3 games for Toffoli, and the game winner last night. And, you know, we've talked about this before throughout the season, Ryan. When Tyler Toffoli gets the opportunity to play with elite talent, he is going to finish. And he did that in a very short period of time in Los Angeles. I think that, you know, if he had that opportunity to play with Anze Kopitar for the last 2 years, it may be a different story in LA for Tyler Toffoli. He may have been considered part of the solution as opposed to a guy that they were going to have to ship out for a future draft pick. But kudos to Vancouver, and, you know, he's fit in quite well.
Let's go to Calgary. Two additions on the blue line. Both made their debut last night. Erik Gustafsson got in late on Monday's trade deadline day. Derek Forbort took the red eye from LA. You would know, get from LA to Boston. That ain't a short flight. He arrived Tuesday morning, played that night. The pair was put together, and it wasn't like they were hidden from the perfection line. Last change went to Boston. What did you make of the early returns? And knowing Derek Forbort more than we do, what have the Flames got particularly in that defensive defenseman that'll play the left side of that third pair?
Well, you know, I think that really the third pairing is something that is much more suited to Derek Forbort. I mean, make no mistake. Derek Forbort played a lot with Drew Doughty, and that is a huge head scratcher for many of us out in Los Angeles. He is not a top pairing defenseman. I've had enough scouts tell me that he is really a seven, at best. But I think that, with the experience that he gained in Los Angeles and put him in a third pairing, that can be an ideal situation and one that, I think in a third pairing, it's fine. In Eric Gustafson, I will agree with one of the comments that Peter Labardius made during the broadcast last night in that, there were things that we saw from Gustafson on the power play last night that I don't think the Flames have seen, in the last couple of years from having a guy like him quarterback the power play. I thought that, I think it was on the second goal, a little bit of deception, looking players off and feeding Sean Monahan. This to me was a great deal for Brad Treliving, to get a guy like Gustafson and not have to lose a player off their roster.
Yeah, no, I liked it. And especially when you look back at the prices that were being paid last Tuesday. So 6 days before the deadline, we saw DeMello, Scandella, Martinez got rumored that day and confirmed the following day. And I'm missing one other deal. Let me pull it up because I got in front of me. Brendan Dillon went to Washington as well. It just felt like for a guy that put up 60 points and flirted with 20 goals as a defenseman, his first full season of play, like that felt like more of a deal than a boy, the prices are high this year, which was kind of where we were at a week ago.
Yeah. I mean, so look, credit to Brad Treliving because we were trying to figure out, okay, what is he going to do? Because I didn't think there was going to be any major dismantling of this roster just because, as you have said, and everyone on the station has said, still trying to figure out the identity of this team. But, he made two deals that didn't cost him anybody. I still wonder if they would like to have tried to bolster things up front. But, man, if Michael Backlund can continue to play like the way he has for the last, 20 games, that's almost like getting, a late deadline deal.
Yeah, he's been really good the last little bit and back to center ice where he belongs. And it's no surprise whoever's playing with Mangiapane and Tkachuk, they've looked better. Those guys are monsters at even strength, and I think quietly might have to be considered core parts moving forward. I think Tkachuk already was, but Mangiapane's getting into that conversation. More even strength goals than Monahan and Gaudreau. Only Tkachuk and Lindholm have more. He's had a superb season at 5-on-5. Let's go to the Oilers. What did you make of their moves and the position that the players put their GM in? I think if this was a team right on the bubble, it would have been harder to move a pair of seconds for Athanasiou, but give the players credit. They put their GM in a spot where he could do that a little more easily, didn't they?
They sure did. And yeah, look, it was long rumored about them trying to acquire Athanasiou and getting Tyler Ennis as well. There's a guy that can play up and down your lineup, and we'll see what happens with Athanasiou in that. A guy that, again, no secret about the fact that defense has been foreign to his game. But, man, him playing with Connor, and they got their early returns last night, 7 points in that game last night for them. And then also Mike Green on the point. I mean, he's not Mike Green that was feeding Alexander Ovechkin many years ago. But if he can be that quarterback for them on the power play and take some minutes and off of, Oscar Klefbom and Darnell Nurse and make them more effective, whether it be a 5-on-5 or killing penalties, then that too is another great add. And then there's that guy in net. I mean, we've beaten up Mike Smith for a good part of this year, but Ryan, he's only lost one game in regulation since the calendar flipped to 2020.
I'm in a shortage of words. It's crazy. And especially when you start looking at, he's still only at a 903. Like, that is below average in terms of save percentage in this league, but the win-loss column sure is tidy after a miserable December.
Yeah, I think it's 10 wins and one regulation loss and four that have gone, past 60 that he's at least earned a point in. So we're talking 14 of 15 games. We're not, that's a really good sample size. So, yeah, look, at times maybe they've outscored some of his deficiencies, but at the end of the day, he's, kind of like when Grant Fuhr and Andy Moog were playing for the Oilers, it's making that save when you need it. And so, kudos to him. And yeah, in this Pacific division that, has a lot of question marks, You know, he's definitely answered one for now at the goaltending position for the Oilers.
Vegas Golden Knights, maybe the biggest shocker in the West in terms of the player. I'm one that would look to the history and would suggest Marc-Andre Fleury is excited because he's shared a crease and won Stanley Cups before. What's your feel on bringing in Robin Lehner with an already established cup-winning future Hall of Fame netminder?
Well, you know, it's funny. After that game on Sunday night that Vegas played Anaheim, I said to myself, they can't go the rest of the way with Malcolm Subban as the backup goalie. I mean, it was three of his last five games after that one that he had given up five goals. And that just puts too much pressure on Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, to have to win every time he's in there. So with Robin Lehner, you know, that helps Fleury. You know, it takes a lot of pressure off Marc-Andre Fleury. It takes a lot of pressure off the Golden Knights because they've got a goaltender whose numbers are actually, I think, better than Fleury's this year. I mean, at least the save percentage is higher than Fleury's. So I love this move. And then, you know, you look at the other needs that this team was addressing. So they were looking for a puck-moving defenseman. They didn't get it, but in Alec Martinez, they got a guy that is better, I think, than what they had on whether it be their, you know, definitely their third pairing. I think tonight he's playing with Shea Theodore in the second pairing, but he's a guy that can block shots. He's, you know, he scored a game-winning goal in the Cup final. So, you know, I like that ad. And the other thing that they were looking for, and it's interesting, I had Gary Lawless, the Golden Knights insider, on my show a week or so ago, and he said to me, they're going to be looking for a bottom six, help in the bottom six. And that's what they got with Nick Cousins, a guy that can be a third-line winger or a fourth-line center. So they're very excited about that ad. I think, you know, he's still trying to take care of some visa issues before he gets to play his first game. But, you know, it makes them so much stronger. And then William Karlsson now playing with Stone and Pacioretty. He's been a different player, and he finally broke out of what I think a 21 or 22 game goalless drought with that hat trick on Sunday night. So I like where the Golden Knights are trending.
What's going on with the Coyotes? This would be a disastrous season if they gave up all those assets for Taylor Hall and missed. And it seems like the most likely outcome for them with all the games they've played, and they're still trying to chase down Nashville at this point.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's now eight of their 13 games in the month of February. It's two goals or less. You know, Rick Tocchet said after the game last night, I mean, it sounds like a broken record, but it's as simple as that. We can't score. And I think a lot of it is that, you know, they've addressed the issues on the wing, you know, when they brought in Phil Kessel and they bring in Taylor Hall. But I think that, you know, down the middle continues to be an issue for them. And they just don't seem to be strong enough in that area. Because, you know, the other concern was when, you know, when Darcy Kuemper went down and Antti Raanta came in, it didn't look really good at the beginning. But Raanta's played really well. You can't blame him. I'll still look back to that 1-0 loss to St. Louis when I think he stopped, you know, 41 or 42 shots that night.
That was
and his Coyotes and his team only had 6 shots in the last 40. So, you know, They do need more help down the middle. And they haven't, I was seeing a story Craig Morgan from The Athletic did, talking about the fact that they have not had anybody, hit 40 in the lifetime of, Keith Tkachuk was the last guy that played for the Coyotes that ever hit 40. But it's been 11 straight seasons that it's been a real struggle for them to find some potent scoring.
Okay, we'll continue our tour. Let's keep walking along the coast or towards the coast from the desert. The Sharks, boy, it's been an ugly year, but they've actually done a pretty sneaky good job of recouping some picks. Now, they've given up a ton when you look back at the Evander Kane deal, the Erik Karlsson deal, there was conditional picks for re-signing, but somehow they have a first this year, and I really would love the true serum for Julian Brisebois and Doug Wilson on how it happened.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, if you're, because it was a bit of a head scratcher for me as well. But you got to remember, you know, if Tampa does as well as they hope to do, then that first round draft pick is going to be what? You know, anywhere between 28 and 31, or maybe 25 and 31. So, you know, for Tampa, they've got to win now. Like that first round draft pick ain't going to mean anything to them, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. If they don't win a Stanley Cup. So I think that, you know, they're trying to fill, you know, they're looking at the boxes that they need to have filled, and they have to win now. So they feel, you know, the feeling being whether it's Barkley, Goodrow, or Blake Coleman, those guys check the boxes. And in a team that's got a lot of, you know, other salaries to deal with, especially when you look at Vasilevsky in the offseason, they need cost certainty. And that's what Barkley, Goodrow, and Blake Coleman give them beyond this year. So I the more I think about it, the more it does make sense for me that Tampa made that deal to get Goodrow and the one that they made for Blake Coleman.
LA Kings were busy. We knew they'd be busy. They've moved out a bunch of parts to contenders. That's what you do when you're rebuilding. They are loaded up with prospects and picks. Did they get enough? How would you grade their trade deadline?
Well, I think on the surface, I think Rob Blake did a really good job, in getting the draft picks that he did. Now, there was a lot of excitement, when you look at the Jack Campbell trade, it was a third round pick and it would become a second if Campbell were to win six games and the Maple Leafs would get themselves into the playoffs. And also, if Kyle Clifford resigned, they get a second as well. And it was looking good that Campbell was going to reach six, got to three pretty quickly. But it's funny, I was taking a look at the schedule, and there's only two sets of back-to-backs left, one being in L.A. and Anaheim. So I'm not even sure if Jack Campbell is going to, get the opportunity to play, more than two more games for the Maple Leafs. The other deals, Derek Forbort deal to Calgary, they got a fourth. My issue with that deal is that the LA Kings chose to leave Braden McNabb unprotected and kept Derek Forbort. And now they have neither of them. And there was, they're not protecting McNabb over Forbort to me was a real head scratcher. So at the end of the day, he made the best of the situation. The other deals, Alec Martinez, 2 seconds, good deal. So I like what Rob Blake did. The Tyler Toffoli deal, again, I said to you earlier in the show, I think the Kings mishandled Tyler Toffoli, but at the end of the day, they got as much as they could get for him, looking at his numbers.
Yeah, looking up the next 2 years in the draft, the Kings didn't add another first, but they've got 3 seconds this year, 2 thirds this year, 2 fourths, and next year, 2 seconds, 2 thirds, 2 fourths, with probably a few more sales along the way if next year isn't the year that turns it around. That's a nice little war chest for Rob Blake and company, who also just got ranked the number one prospect pipeline in the league. So maybe things aren't as bleak near term as it looks like in the standings right now.
Well, no. And look, if Arthur Kaliev, who's playing in Hamilton, he's on pace to become, I think, the third player in OHL history behind Tyler Toffoli and DeBrincat to have back-to-back 50-goal seasons. That's a guy that they hope, there's a chance he can be in that on this team next year. Or maybe it's 2 years away. And we've talked about the names like Turcotte, Kapari, and Fagamo, and do this. The future is potentially bright. I think that if you're a Kings fan, there's hope. And then the debut of Gabe Vilardi, that was something that was one for the ages. That was a Hollywood story with him scoring, I think it was like 6 seconds into his first shift of the game.
Love it. Ducks, last stop on our tour. They moved, a lot of talented young players. Richie, they got into a bit of a contract squabble with. Sprong was a guy they brought in who looked really good in a small sample last year after the addition and the swap, I believe, with Pittsburgh. And then Cash is a guy that, when healthy, has been great for them, but the healthy part's not been easy for him.
Yeah, and I think that, that was a concern because, Bob Murray seemed very reluctant for the last couple of seasons to move Andre Kasha. But I think that, the fact that he has not been able to stay healthy, that I guess it was just time to move on. And Nick Ritchie, there's a guy that you believe can give more. You hope he can give more because it's just been disappointing. But a guy to me that's easily replaceable. And I think that for Boston, both teams gave up players that I think that they could have gotten more out of. One other thing, Ryan, I quickly to throw out there.
Yep.
So much talk about Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
I out earlier today. This is a guy that is 241 in scoring this year. If it wasn't Joe Thornton, I think that when you look at the 4 goals and 23 points, there just obviously was not someone that wanted to bring him in. And I think even if you bring Joe in, with the season he's had, if he became a healthy scratch in the playoffs, man, that would just be an even bigger distraction.
Yeah, and it sounded like he had a real short list of places he was willing to go. So if it wasn't three or four teams saying yes, the other ones didn't matter. Interesting. We'll see what happens in the offseason, whether he re-ups, whether he's done, whether he'd be open to a market change. I guess everything's on the table now with San Jose in what looks like a rebuild. Thank you for your time, sir. We'll do it again next week.
All right, bud. Take care. Thanks for having me, as always.